if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen,
country, and video games. BRB UK.
Worse teeth,
better accents.
Hello, hello, and indeed ahoy hoy, and welcome here to this podcast, which is called BRB UK. It's episode 354, which means we've been doing this for far too long.
Well, you and I have been doing it for 400 or so episodes by now.
Yeah, well, I took some time off to be a student again. But anyway, I'm Dan, this is BRB UK. Welcome to your weekly dose of, well, us. And I'm joined this week by somebody who's going solo. Tim, there's no coal man because he's off doing holiday things.
No coal mans. He's holidaying and it's just the two of us building castles in the sky.
Hey, nice. I just can't quit you.
That's a different thing, but okay.
Do I get to be the big spoon?
You can be any spoon you like.
Yeah, big spoon coming through. Anywho, so there's no stabilizing influence of Coleman, which means I don't have anyone to back me up when I'm telling Tim to shut up about VR.
This could go badly for both of us.
There's no one to remind Tim that his chair is squeaking and it makes editing an absolute pain in the bum. And I'm just assuming Tim has plugged everything in at his end and that the recording's working correctly because, you know, all bets are off, basically.
Yeah.
Tim, how have you been, mate?
Yeah, all right. I've been massively busy this week. I did manage to sneak in some video games, partly because I went to an event, which we'll come on to in a bit.
Splendid.
But yeah, didn't get much time for video gaming other than that. I literally worked lots of hours this week and extra days and extra hours. So yeah.
Well, while you were lollygagging, I won the Formula One World Championship.
Wow.
I know, right? on a video game.
Yeah. Okay.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But still, what have you done with your week? Huh? Yeah?
I've conquered cities.
Yeah, but that F1 2019 game is all of the fun times, I tell you. It's great.
Yep, still enjoying that. That's good.
Still enjoying it. And I'm on season two now, and Max Verstappen is being a right little toe rag.
Who do you have on your team? Who's your team member?
It was Lando Norris.
Lando Norris.
Because I was driving for McLaren. And I'm still driving from McLaren.
Definitely not a Star Wars character, yeah?
No, Lando Calrissian.
Right,
just okay. Lando Norris.
Lando Norris.
Which kind of would be awesome if you could just kind of hack Lando Calrissian.
Lando Calrissian and Chuck Norris had a child.
No, but why not, Tim? Just for the sake of keeping this conversation as short as humanly possible, why not?
Get.
Now it's Pierre Gasly, because presumably he's been fired from Red Bull for being
okay.
Which looks like might actually happen in real life, so...
Just realised we didn't ask that question last week when we were talking about it.
Well, now you know. You can get off the edge of that seat you were on in sheer anticipation, Tim.
I did also have feedback from a listener that they enjoyed your in-depth discussion of F1, having also recently been to the British Grand Prix and not bought this year's game, so they were interested to hear your views.
Well, I'm glad I've said something useful. First time in 39 years, done something useful.
Yeah, a broken clock is right twice a day.
So. It's the shotgun approach of information giving. Yes. If I spout enough crap, eventually some of it, just by the law of averages, is going to be useful.
354 episodes in, and we found some use for
us. At least that many hours, probably 500 hours of podcasting.
Oh my word, don't put it in that sort of terms. Like, oh wow.
So which means, Tim, you'd be... It's maths time, ladies and gentlemen. That's how we have fun around here.
When Coleman's away.
That is 20.83 days of constant talking.
Woses. Well, and there's people that literally have listened to us for that long.
Well, they download it. Whether or not they listen to it is an entirely different question.
No. This is the thing about doing a public event like Tabletop Tuesday where people actually come from around the world to visit it. I get feedback from people that have actually listened to us since, not even going back to Sarcastic Gaming days, going back to the original Community Cast days and stuff as well. There are people that have literally been listening to us for, what, 10 years?
When we were a mere itch in Doc Adams's ballsack.
Thank you very much, Doc Adams, founder of Extra Life as well, so go and check out extralife.org, but yes.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, we blame you.
It's all your fault, dammit. Anyway, I suppose we've got to talk about the headlines. In completely not very surprising news, Rockstar Games.
Yeah.
It would seem that according to a Kotaku article, which relates back to public tax filings for Rockstar North.
And it's particularly a watchdog that's looked into the report that this was based on as well.
So a group called Tax Watch, we can all guess what they watch. The group's director, George Turner, has basically said, you can herp the dirt here as much as you like, that this is a drive-by assault. Can you see what he did there? On the British taxpayer and corporate welfare scrounging at its very worst. So to give you some context, in 2018, Rockstar North reported profits of £8.3 million.
That was probably a light year for them as well, with no game release as well.
And it paid £0 in corporate tax.
Zero.
Thanks largely due to claiming more than £19 million in tax credit through the video game tax relief program, which Rockstar managed to qualify for in 2016.
Now, I've heard game developers say, don't have a go at that program.
No, that program absolutely is, you know, so many game studios, small and large, benefit from that in an industry that requires such front-loading of cash into a project on a completely uncertain expectation of return. So that is key.
Yeah, that's not the problem in this part of the equation. And although Rockstar are a very successful company and Take-Two behind them and everything, they have a lot of money that they've generated from the sales of their games and stuff. They shouldn't be poor. They should be they probably are the richest in the UK, I would imagine. I'm trying to think of anyone.
They're not shy of a bob. Let's put it that way.
As I said, they have a parent company, so it's a bit more complicated and stuff as well. But generally speaking, yeah, this bit of a dick move. I don't like any companies that don't pay their tax. I don't like Amazon, and I publicly state that. I'm not saying that I don't use them, and it seems to be a necessary evil of the world at the moment, but I do try and use them as little as I can easily do, basically, and try and support local shops and other things and that kind of stuff more. But I don't like hearing of any big company that should be paying their way, not paying their way, and not paying into the British tax-paying system.
Well, especially if they've directly benefited from a tax-funded scheme.
Yeah, and I'm a bit torn on whether they should or shouldn't even be applying for it in the position that they're in. And part of me says, well, just because they're successful doesn't mean they shouldn't be able to take the same benefits as everyone else. Okay, it may be a large amount of money, but then they're also generating a large amount of money. But as a result of that, they're not then contributing towards paying tax.
Here's where I come down on it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that people shouldn't benefit and shouldn't reap the rewards of their own hard work. I'm not saying that. But at the same time, if you're earning a lot, each individual quid probably doesn't mean incrementally as much to you as a person with cash in comparison to someone who does not have a lot of cash.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point of view that I think if you're earning enough and can afford to do so, it's your civic duty to help support members of society who are less fortunate and who need a bit of a helping hand. That's just the way my brain works. And it just angers me that it's not that they've got away with, like, say, if there's a discrepancy in how much they paid £0.
Yeah.
And they have made an absolute metric arse ton of money here.
And I think if I'm correct in saying, this goes back a little while as well, as in something that they haven't paid for years, possibly. I don't 100% know if that's the case, but you wouldn't think this was a one-off, basically. They've had some very profitable years in that period.
And let's be clear, we're not saying that no one associated with Rockstar has paid any tax whatsoever. We're not saying that. Employees who were employed by Rockstar North still would have paid their tax, and rightfully so. And that is as things should be. But as a corporate entity, they have not. So I think that's just a point to be really clear about.
Also, slightly playing devil's advocate here, but this isn't unique to Rockstar and it's not unique to video games. Like, this is the way most big companies operate. All we're saying is this has come up as a thing, and I think we're both in the camp where we're saying, we don't like this.
No.
This isn't good for you. This isn't a good PR sort of point in time, but it's also just not a nice thing to hear that company's doing, and I think less of the company because of it now, basically.
In the red, Dead Redemption, am I right? Am I right? Look what the shit I get away with in comments on here. Anyway, Andrew Wilson.
Yep.
He runs everybody's favourite multinational global corporation, Electronic Arts.
I believe America's least favourite corporation some years running.
Yes. So, Tim.
Yes.
You have a Switch.
I have a Switch.
What's your favourite Electronic Arts game to play on your Switch?
No, none of them.
None of them.
None of them.
Why is that, Timothy?
Because FIFA isn't very good and they don't have very many other games. In fact, I can't think if I even own another one.
Exactly. So why don't they have any other games? Why not? Why?
Because they don't like money.
No, that's definitely not the case.
Oh, sorry, it's EA. Right, EA. Right, sorry, yep.
EA. So basically, as is the wont of many a large multinational corporation, they like having a Q&A with their investors. And Andrew Wilson, at said Q&A, was asked directly why The Sims hadn't been ported to the Switch.
That seems like a very reasonable question, to be honest.
I personally think it'd be a good fit.
Yes.
So his response was, okay, one, does the game really fit the profile of that platform in terms of the control or the community ecosystem?
Yes.
Two, do we think the community playing on that platform would appreciate the game to go there, or would they prefer to play it somewhere else? And he went on to cite that a great many owners of the Switch are also owners of an Xbox One, PlayStation 4 or PC, and they often choose to play the games there on those platforms, even though they have a Switch. In other words, putting the additional resource into making an extra Switch version of it probably isn't worth it, or isn't worth the trouble.
One thing I'm just thinking of, is Sims on the mobile?
Yes.
So I guess part of the argument there for them might be, if someone buys it on the Switch, then we could miss out on two sales elsewhere. But also, and I think it's something that Jim Sterling pointed out in a video that he did about this, the Switch system is not as microtransaction friendly.
What could you possibly be insinuating there?
I think it's not that their games don't suit the Switch. I think it's that their business model doesn't suit the Switch. That's, I think, is their bigger problem. And that's why their games aren't there. Like, and that's why it doesn't make as much financial sense. As I said, something like The Sims, they might argue that, you know, you're missing out on two sales. And I can kind of see a point to their argument of most of their games. It would be worth it if they could port it like for like, but they can't usually with FIFA. Part of the problem that they had on the Switch with the early ports of FIFA is that they were a very second-rate kind of version of it, almost, kind of thing, and compared poorly.
And also, didn't they advertise a bunch of features for the Switch version that actually weren't in the Switch version?
I think there was something like that as well, yeah, that didn't make it into the final version. But then there are lots of developers that are making a different version for the Switch and making downgraded versions for it, and most people, like, generally seem fairly happy with that. You know that what you're getting with the Switch, and you know the trade-off of being able to play it portably versus not getting the highest graphic fidelity. But I think there's a lot of gamers that would take the decision to go with portability. I think for me, I would actually almost kind of like a reduced version of FIFA a little bit, especially if it had less microtransaction rubbish stuff they'd do it. But and look, I understand that's kind of a separate issue in a separate mode, but still. But generally, as I said, I can kind of see his point, and I think they shied away from it because it didn't work early on with some of the things that they tried. But like you said, The Sims does seem like a good fit. It seems like a thing that would actually be beneficial to have on a mobile, and maybe you could do like building stuff and then actually play it when you get home. And you know, I kind of see the benefits of that, but they would be doing it if they thought it made financial sense to do it, basically, I think is his argument.
So basically, we can sum this whole story up. People go, why don't you make it for the Switch? And their reply was, because reasons.
Yeah,
pretty much. Which may or may not be related to the ability to monetize an existing product that we've already sold you.
Yeah, I do think that's part of the problem. And maybe if launching, you know, FIFA and FIFA Ultimate Team on the Switch makes it even more difficult to hang on to the FIFA Ultimate Team in the way that it is at the moment, if it's even more people arguing against them, that perhaps makes it, you know, a slippier slope to stand on, basically. So that might be part of the problem as well.
I'm just going to drop this thought in your head, Tim, then we're going to move on to the next item, all right? EA Games, okay, all of EA stuff.
Yep.
I was going to say this, Mass Effect on the Switch, and then we're going to move to the next...
we could do. But if you remember, they did bring Mass Effect 3, I think it was, to the Wii.
Yeah, they got their hands burned by that. But that's, I think that was more an issue with the Wii U as a platform than anything else.
I remember seeing it in preview.
No, don't be a Wii U apologist.
No, I was just going to say, I remember seeing it in preview before it was out and going, you know, one thing that could be really cool, just having the mini map on the screen while you're playing. That's quite cool.
I know, right?
But yeah.
Yeah. Anywho. So on from penny pinching, onto a bit of good news for
good news.
Switch Online members. The online service that never started giving, it's finally giving you something.
Well, it gave us Tetris 99.
It did, but you had to pay for it, didn't you?
No.
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 You had to pay for the single player bit.
Yes, that was a separate thing that came out afterwards, but yeah.
In a weird switcheroo of how things were in the previous generations, where you got single player along with what you bought, but had to pay extra for multiplayer stuff, it's now complete switch around, apparently, for Switch. So, for a limited time, you will be able to play Mario Tennis for free. Now, note this is
Mario
not...
Mario Tennis Aces, but yes.
Mario Tennis Aces. Note that this is subtly different, young whippersnappers, to Mario Tennis Aces is free for a limited time. Mm-hmm. That's not the same thing. This is, you will be able to play it for a select period in time for free.
But I thought, and this could have been in the points of interest coming up, but I thought this was newsworthy just because it's got a couple of aspects to it. One, the fact that they're doing it with Mario Tennis Aces, and this is available, and just making note of the fact that it's available at this time. But then also, this is something where I think we got Mario Tennis Aces in the UK, but they'd already done a similar thing with Captain Toad Treasure Tracker in Japan. But this is something that it looks like this is the start of a new trial service. So this will be a new kind of string to the bow of Switch Online in general, where you get to play seemingly a first-party game for a limited period of time, but get to play it for free. I think as the article that on Eurogamer that we kind of pulled this quote from, or pulled the information from, pointed out, you know, it does mean you could get to try it out for a bit, but you could also see how quickly you can try and play through the whole game. I mean, I think Mario Tennis Aces is a good one to do this with, because in a way it's kind of almost, you know, generally replayable. It's got a fairly long campaign mode to it as well, from what I've seen. So, yeah, I think this would be a good one to have fun with. A game I sort of toyed around with the idea of picking up with and didn't, even after enjoying parts of the demo, but I was a bit put off by some of the stuff they've added to it. But be keen to try it for free and actually get a go at going through it a little bit and having a go on it. But also, the trial scheme works in such a way that if you then go on to buy the game, and it looks like, I don't know if this will always be the case, but at least for this first one, Mario Tennis Aces is, I think, 33% off for the time of the trial as well.
Oh, nice.
I think if you buy the game at some point after you've tried the trial version, your progress will transfer over to the final game.
Nice. And if you've already got the game downloaded, you won't need to re-download anything as well. Remember that.
So it all sounds quite good, really. I think that sounds like quite a good thing. And even if you're not particularly interested in Mario Tennis Aces this time around, it does mean that there'll probably be other first-party titles that come around on the service as well. So that's quite cool.
Splendid. Now, there is some breaking news, Timothy.
Broken or breaking?
Both, slightly.
Oh, okay.
And I'm giving a little bit of a shout-out to my good buddy Benjamin from the BRB Discord for just posting this in the Destiny chat channel.
Yep.
Destiny 2 Shadowkeep has been delayed.
I should have known it was Destiny 2 news.
Yeah. So Destiny 2 Shadowkeep was originally slated to be released on September the 17th this year.
Okay.
It has now been delayed to the 1st of October.
So a few weeks.
And I quote, "Being independent means that the future of Destiny 2 is entirely on our team. It also means that we're agile enough to choose to do what's best for the game and our players, even if it's the hard choice. We didn't make this decision lightly. We're sorry for screwing up any plans you may have had, and we want to share this information as quickly as we could. To make up for this, we're extending Moments of Triumph through September 17th, so giving you 3 more weeks to complete the challenges and get your Bungie rewards. There's going to be an additional Iron Banner the week of September 17th, and their plans for cross-save are continuing as planned. So they're still going to be getting all that going, so you can get your friends list sorted out." So that is a message from Mark Noseworthy and Luke Smith, the directors of the Destiny franchise. So there you go, breaking news!
How do you view that as a big Destiny fan? Is that something... Are you happy with that at the moment?
I'm actually quite pleased, because that clashed with some time off that I'd already planned to do other stuff in.
Right, okay, so that is good.
And I know Cobbleweb, who's another friend of mine on the BRB Discord, he was originally had a week off to do it, but his work then sent him gonna send him to China that week for some reason. So it's worked out quite well for us.
So all good for BRB Destiny players, maybe not the wider community, perhaps. I like the way they seem to be getting the word independent in as early as possible in every press release they've had since leaving Activision.
Hopefully this will be the only release date slip for it, but who knows? I mean, one of my thoughts with Bungie has always been, although having corporate overlords telling you what to do is not necessarily a great thing, having a corporate overlord does mean that you had your homework in on time.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
So make of that what you will. Anyway, I'm bored of headlines. I need to be interested in some points, Timothy.
Okay.
Here are some interesting points. This one's clearly from you. A new Street Fighter V trailer. Wait, what? Is that still alive?
Yeah, well, just news to me as well, but yeah.
But apparently E. Honda, Poison and Lucia are three new characters that will be added to the PlayStation 4 and PC. And they're going to be available this Sunday. That's August 4th. Which, surprise, surprise, coincides with the Evo 2019 final.
So I thought that was worth mentioning just because, one, oh, they're still releasing characters. Two, how the hell is E Honda not in there already?
Yeah, I know, right? I must say, Street Fighter V kind of passed me by. I mean, after the kind of the chaos of its launch, which kind of frankly put me off it a bit.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We discussed it a few times. I've played Coleman's version quite a bit, but I never actually picked up the game despite being a big fan of the series because I really didn't like their business model at launch at all. So I had a hard time supporting it. Good news that these characters are coming. The three popular characters from what I know, or at least E. Honda and Poison are fairly popular. I'm not sure about Lucia. But then also worth mentioning the fact that, you know, just kind of reiterating that Evo 2019 finals are this weekend as well. And that's always, yeah, good fun viewing time for some high-level Street Fighter and other fighting games, and it's something that we normally watch and report on, so might want to have a look.
Top-tier fighting game action is always like full-contact chess.
Full-contact chess, yeah.
Is the way I like to think of it. But it actually is, no, it is deeply strategic if you watch real, true high-level play.
And it does get quite exciting, and I think, was it last year's final that was really good, possibly, or maybe the year before? But anyway, but yeah, generally it's always quite good viewing, and the finals in particular are generally quite good, but you get some good matchups on the way as well. So yeah, might be worth having a look at this weekend.
I'm just going to follow that up with a haven't you done well segment of points of interest. Now, first off, I'm kind of quite pleased to see people doing well for themselves, not only in terms of their hobby, video games, but also in real-life grown-up stuff.
Yep.
So the first UK esports scholar, Julia Schwertz, I think that's how you pronounce it. If you're listening, Julia, which I thoroughly doubt you are, my apologies for completely murdering the pronunciation of your surname. She was the first esports scholarship recipient. That was from the University of Roehampton. So she was team captain for their League of Legends team, and that together with a strong academic performance led to her, you know, essentially getting money to do her studies and continue to be awesome at League of Legends. But she's clearly a very bright spark, so she's finished her undergraduate law degree, got a first, that's just showing off, was the top performing graduate on her course, and also received the Oxford University Press Law Prize, which was given to the highest overall performer for the year's law cohort at her university. So yeah, she's really active in the esports scene as well, trying to really push kind of, you know, equality in terms of team makeup. 45% of people who play video games are female, but much, probably 4.5%, if that, esports team members. So, you know, good on you, Julia.
Yeah. It's generally really good, positive news.
And it's just really nice to hear that universities are considering, you know, esports as a scholarship-worthy thing. It's not just football or tennis or rugby or pig bladder ball.
And I guess it's one of those things where you kind of have to pay attention to, you know, the number of people that are watching it and the amount of money involved in that sort of thing. But it does have a beneficial side that I think a university could appreciate. It's good there isn't the stigma attached to a video game. It's seen as a positive thing that you're doing, that you're going out and doing this and being very good at this game, and this adds another feather to your bow on top of your being intelligent and being good at applying yourself to your course kind of thing.
I think it's a feather to your cap, but I see where you're going.
Yes. Feather to a bow would be not very helpful.
Yeah, exactly. So in other amply done well news, one of the winners of the World Cup finals of Fortnite...
I think he was the solo mode winner, wasn't he, I think?
I think it was the duo mode.
Oh, right, okay, he was one of the... Right, yeah.
15-year-old chap called Jaden Ashman from Essex took home half of the prize fund, because obviously his teammate got the other half. So 15-year-old just won 1.8 million quid.
Nice.
For playing Fortnite. And bless him, he said the thing he wants to do is he's going to use the money to buy his mum a house.
Aww.
What a nice guy.
Is this the same mother who threw... Is this the same...
Yeah, a little bit. Yep. So his mum admitted she'd previously thrown out her son's Xbox and snapped his headset in frustration in order to make him focus on schoolwork. So since attending the Fortnite World Cup event with her son, though, she's changed her tune and is now a champion of esports as a positive force for her son's well-being.
Because that schoolwork never bought her a house.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he hadn't won, I think her tune might be slightly different. So, yeah, but, you know, good on him. And, you know, I think it's always nice to, even though I don't understand Fortnite because I'm a crumbly old fart, good on him for doing well.
We've kind of had digs, I guess, is the nicest way of putting it, at kind of Fortnite. But it's just, yeah, it's not really for us. We're obviously no. showing our age here a little bit. But it's definitely, yeah, more of a young person's game. So, like, as the fact that someone young, well, I think most of them were won by quite young people, though, generally, from what I saw. No real surprise there, but it's good. And it was nice that it was a British kid taking some of the success as well, basically. So, yeah, that's always nice. And extra nice that he seems to be doing a nice thing with his winnings as well, sort of thing. So, yeah.
Good on us, Britain. Well done.
In these bad times, nice to hear nice things.
And the only other thing is, apparently, Bandai Namco are going to launch a separate mobile company. Apparently. That's what I've heard. Presumed to call Ban-Nam-Mob.
Ban-Nam-Mob.
Ban-Nam-Mob, which is...
I think it's just BNM.
It's a very tasty Vietnamese dish.
BNM is what they're going for by the looks of their press release.
Ban-Nam-Mob.
BNM.
No, Ban-Nam-Mob.
I think they've already got one in Japan and possibly America already, but this is their European branch that they're looking to open in Barcelona now, basically.
Do you know what they should call it? Ban-Nam-Mob.
Ban-Nam-Mob. Yeah, opening in 2020 and recruitment going now. So if you want to go make some mobile games for Bandai Namco, you know where to go.
Ban-Nam-Mob.
Ban-Nam-Mob.
So you too can play Ace Combat in novice mode on the tube, Tim.
Good.
Yeah, I'm not surprised yet another mobile studio attached to a larger company is appearing. I wonder if we're going to see a bit of a mobile games crash in some way, because we're getting a lot of stuff that's just being churned out that is the attachment to an existing franchise is, you know, tenuous at best sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, I've literally stopped playing games on mobile and since I got my Switch, pretty much, basically.
I mean, I will occasionally play through The Room or something on my phone, because there's a couple of good things on mobile, but, you know, I perhaps it's just me being an old git again.
It's the battery drain for me. I'd rather have the battery for other things, music or writing emails or just actually, you know, being a phone.
Wow, that made you sound so old. Bloody phones aren't just bloody phones anymore. It's not bloody phone. I don't need to look up internet on my bloody phone.
Sorry, I can't talk to you on my phone. I've got no battery because I've been playing a game. Yeah. Like, that's just annoying.
Blended. Right. Well, I suppose we better talk about what we've done played now. We've taken a little paddle through the week's news. So what we've done played, only things I've done played, really, you've already heard, I played more F1 2019, still loving it. And I've also got back into, in a big way, Dead Cells on the Switch. That's had a couple of updates since I last played it, and I've forgotten how beautifully crafted that game is, and it's well worth checking out if you haven't played it before.
Is that action platformer? Yes, is that the one I'm thinking?
Action platformy Metroidvania roguey thing. So it ticks as many of your boxes. I believe procedural generation might be in there at some point as well.
It's indie game bingo.
Yeah, bingo, Full House.
Yeah, I might look out for it on a sale, I think.
Mate, it is a great game. It is tough, but it's a great game.
Oh, okay.
And surprise, surprise, I've also been playing me some Destiny.
Destiny.
Destiny, because it's its year-end thing of here's a bunch of stuff to do and you get shiny armor and, you know, your e-penis will grow massively, etc., etc. So I've been doing that, as is my want. So, yeah. So, Tim, I'm purposely reserving the rest of time for the heat death of the universe. The rest of time for you to talk about the games you've got to talk about.
Till the heat death of the universe.
Hit me with your game talk.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get invited along to go to the first QuakeCon Europe last week.
Invited or bought a ticket?
No, I was invited. Basically, I went along to the press day, which was on the Friday beforehand, and the public day was open on the Saturday. And there was, I think they were expecting 1,000 people that they'd sold tickets to, basically, on the Saturday. I didn't quite fully understand that as a member of the press day, I was invited to go on the Saturday. But as it turned out, I had to work that day anyway, so I couldn't return, which would have been nice because I didn't get to play everything that was there. But I got an appointment to come along and actually play Doom Eternal, because they were all appointment-based, basically. So that was the main headline thing that I got to play with as well. I also got a quick go on Cyberpilot on the VR stuff.
Val, don't you try and sneak that in.
Sneak it in. But then we also went through a keynote that was done in the original QuakeCon over in Texas. And then we got to kind of sit down and watch that at the event while that was live. And then they had a kind of bar event afterwards, basically. As I said, Doom Eternal was the main headline thing and the main thing that I turned up for. I think we all liked the previous, Doom, the 2016 version when that came out. No, I think we all played it and all liked it.
Yeah, no, great game.
Fantastic game, and I really like it and I really love it. I don't know about you, I never went back and finished it. Part of a problem of doing what we're doing a little bit.
I'm not going to lie, it's a little bit like my approach to Witcher 3. I've started it a number of times, but then always got distracted by something that was shiny and always meant to go back to it, but never did.
And I think it's a slightly difficult game to come back to after a period of time because it is kind of skill-based a little bit as well, kind of thing, no?
Yeah, it relies like Twitch muscle memory.
Exactly, kind of thing. But a game I'd happily go back for, and since playing a bit with Doom Eternal, I'm even more keen to kind of return and go for that. But it's a little bit of time since I'd played that one, and kind of jumping in and playing this one, I was a little bit like, is that new? Is that new? So if some of this stuff isn't entirely new, that's my slight unfamiliarity and misremembering the last version. But one of the main differences in the kind of the little bit I got to play, there was a bit more kind of climbing in the environment, basically, which is something I don't really remember from the last game, but you can kind of attach yourself to a surface and climb up it now. And there was a bit of stuff with that where I was like jumping off one surface and then jumping to another. And that was a kind of section that seemed to be a bit further into the game. There was kind of a couple of disjointed sections that I got to kind of play through. And yeah, one seemed a bit earlier on and one was a bit later into the game where it seemed like you had a few more options and a few more things going on. But yeah, it was almost like a tough kind of platforming challenge. And I was like, I definitely don't remember doing so much of this in the last game. But yeah, in terms of like combat differences and stuff like that, there's the one main difference for me is you've still got like your kind of glory kills and all that kind of the fun stuff that goes along with that. But you get like a certain reward based on the like glory kills and other options. And if I'm getting it the wrong way around, it seems, I think glory kills gave you health back.
And I think some ammo occasionally as well.
Well, this is the thing. Like you've got different ways of killing people and that will give you a different reward now, basically. So if you do the glory kills, you get health. And I think if you chainsaw people, you get ammo.
Right, yes. I think that was the case. That was definitely the case with 2016, dude.
But then you've also got your belching breath on top of that, basically, which I don't think was in the previous game, no? You can kind of belch fire and set things on fire.
Yeah, you can't do that. Can confirm no deli belly in previous game.
Yeah, right. And that gets you another reward. I can't remember what it was. I think it's armor, possibly.
Chunda Wonder. Please tell me, if there's an achievement, it's called Chunda Wonder.
It's that sort of balance. But yeah, it seems like you've got more...
I get knocked down, I throw up again.
A slight variation in the skills that are available and the rewards that it gives you in return. And you always get that reward based on the kill that you do. You need like fuel for your chainsaw and stuff still and stuff like that. But then there's also another pickup where it's a kind of one-up style pickup. And instead of returning to a checkpoint when you die, you'll come back to life. Like if you've got one of these things, you'll come back to life where you died. So yeah, that mixes it up a bit and changes things a little bit. They've also thrown in a few more enemies. We didn't get to see too much of that in the bit that I played, but in the presentation that they showed in the keynote afterwards, they showed like some really massive monsters they've introduced and stuff as well. I won't go through everything they went in the keynote because that's viewable online and stuff, and people have probably already watched that if you're keen on this sort of stuff. For me, like jumping into the game, I wasn't that mad on the platforming type stuff. As you know, I'm not the biggest platforming fan generally anyway, and I could have lived without some of that stuff, but it was quite well implemented and quite well done. And yeah, the combat's like, you know, really visceral and really enjoyable again. I got to mess around with the two styles of shotgun, the combat shotgun and the super shotgun, I think it was, and the kind of rocket launcher, and you know, your kind of standard stuff. There was I think ballista was the new weapon as well, and that seemed quite good fun, kind of launching stuff. And there was a plasma rifle as well that I got to play with as well. you know what you're getting with an id Software game generally anyway, and with Doom, like, it's that kind of really big chunky weapons that have got a real weight to them and really feel like you're, you know, you're really kind of got a lot of power behind you as the Doom Slayer as well, basically. And it's one of those things where it's got that nice visceral loop. It's still got that whole thing of you want to be on the front foot, being aggressive, and it encourages you to kind of, you know, not sit in corners, not behind cover like you do in a lot of other sort of games. This is very much you want to be out there going through things, doing your glory kills and getting all the rewards that goes with that. And yeah, it's that whole combat loop works as well, if not better, than it did before, sort of thing. I mean, like, it really it really nails that feel and how that works. And yeah, it's something that they haven't messed with too much. I think they've added, you know, a few new elements to it, but without really, you know, it wasn't broken, so there was no need to.
And I ain't going to fix it.
One of the other things they did talk about in the keynote was the new invasion mode. Again, we didn't get to play this because they literally just kind of were talking about it on the keynote, or just introduced it on the keynote. Yeah, that looked quite interesting. It was a mode where you've got one person being the Doomslayer versus other people being particular, I think it was five classes of the enemies, and then you can also spawn like lower level enemies as one of like your, you know, abilities and powers in the game, sort of thing.
Okay.
And yeah, like, that actually looked like they, you know, thought about how to make that as interesting as possible while making it asymmetric but balanced kind of thing. And it looked like that was quite an interesting mix and actually could, you know, be something worth messing around with as well, basically.
Well, I think there's also something to be said for, you know, previous kind of asymmetrical multiplayer games like that, which I think is probably a fair way to describe it, have been very long, drawn-out affairs, whereas it sounds like actually Doom being Doom is going to be quite quick and, you know, high octane, which I actually think would be a nice refreshing change.
They did talk about this having other multiplayer modes and stuff as well. This was just the invasion mode was just one that they hadn't previously talked about and wasn't in the previous game, so they were kind of focusing on that. Also, in general, it's something that they focused on in the keynote overall, and was just a, you know, a general focus of QuakeCon as well. It's the fact that, you know, they were celebrating the fact that it's the 25th year of Doom, hence the fact that we got ports of the original Doom on Switch, etc. as well, and I think it was PS4 and Xbox as well now.
Yeah, I hear they're not necessarily great.
I see people saying, you know, fundamental problems with a game that was supposed to be controlled by keyboard and mouse. And if that's your argument, get the hell out.
You're just goading me as a convert to the PC Master Race, aren't you?
Yes, I know. But no, look, if that's your argument, like, I'm not going to play it with keyboard and mouse. So unless they do this, I'm not going to play the game. So would you rather I didn't play the game? Is that you want to take the game away from me because I don't play with keyboard and mouse? Anyway.
It's on them to make it accessible and playable to the largest number of people as well, so.
Yeah, and like, if you don't want to play it on a console, you don't have to. There's no rule that says you have to buy a version of the game. I know, like, anyway, but yeah.
So, what?
But that I do think it's genuine criticism that their login thing was overly aggressive, but they have already come out and said, look, we apologise for that being the case, and it was supposed to be optional, and we'll fix it. Okay, wasn't great at launch. Maybe that was something that was kind of bunged in at the last minute. No one likes having to have multiple accounts for all these things and doing that. I don't like that either. I don't like having the bloody Ubisoft thing and this and that and that. Like, I just want my login and my sign-in, and you can attach anything you like to that, because that's what I have, you know, that my online ID.
Do you know what? It's broke bloody Britain, Tim.
But yeah, but I mean, look, okay. That aside, that was part of the reason that they launched them, and I like it when they do the whole, and you can buy it now, except for the fact that I wasn't sitting at home at that time, because I was sitting in the audience, didn't have my Switch on me, and couldn't buy it now.
But, you know, first world problems.
Yeah, right, but I might pick that up at some point. I look forward to playing through that at some point. From the little bit I got to play, and it was only about sort of half an hour, 45 minutes or so I got to play, seemed more of the same with a few extra twists, and that being no bad thing, basically.
Right.
Yeah, I am looking forward to purchasing this game and possibly not finishing this one either, but enjoying my time with it while I'm able to keep up with it.
Well, no, I'll tell you what though, it does, playing Doom 2016 was one of the first things that really made me feel like I have no reflexes anymore.
I see, I don't know, like, it was one of those things where at first I was like, ooh, this seems a bit too intense. And then as I got into it and got up to speed with it, I was like, oh, this is awesome kind of thing. Like, I felt more empowered by that and almost less inclined to think like you were, basically. So
awesome. But that's not the only thing you've done, is it, Tim?
Just before we move on quickly, though, I did mention that I played Cyberpilot on the VR. I might be getting a review copy of this, but for my early like playthrough, I'm a bit worried, and from other things I've heard, I'm a little bit concerned. I was a bit worried that they didn't seem to be really pushing this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, at QuakeCon, they had Youngblood there as one of the other early releases. That seems to be getting a bit of pushback on that, but it generally seems that if you're playing in co-op, it seems a much more enjoyable experience, and that seems to be the way it was designed and marketed, so I would definitely do that, basically. Beyond that, as I said, I got to play a bit of Cyberpilot, and yeah. I mean,
yeah.
My time was somewhat limited by the fact that the person that was playing before me took forever to not get through the training bit at the beginning of the game.
No, perhaps that's why it's there for. That's why it's there for, mate.
But I then got through the training bit of the game, and admittedly, I did something weird. I backed out of a screen I shouldn't have done, but then there was no way to relaunch into the level.
Like, God damn it,
to actually kick the game off, and I was like,
this is why you can't have nice things.
I done broke it, and I need to run off to the thingy, so I'm going
to
run off now.
You need to run off to the thingy.
I don't know,
okay,
I had to go
good.
To the keynote. Like, the keynote was starting in, like, 5 minutes after that, so,
or the thingy, as all seasoned professionals call it.
Yeah, so I didn't get too much time with that, but I did get to play through a little bit of stuff, and it's like picking stuff up, and you're in a lift going up and down floors, and like one of them's like a research lab, and you're putting stuff together, and one of them you're trying to upgrade the software on a drone and this type of stuff. It's tactile and it's okay and stuff like that, but I don't know, it felt a little bit limited, and from what I've heard, the combat isn't great. But as I said, I might come back and try and play through that myself and actually do a full review and see if it improves in combat, or I can get some more enjoyment out of it. But yeah, early impressions, not so great on that. Certainly nowhere near the level of fun I had playing Doom Eternal, which was, yeah, really generally good fun.
Fair enough.
QuakeCon seemed like it was a nice thing to have in Europe and all that sort of stuff. As I said, they had the whole keynote, and just the other thing I wanted to mention, because they kicked the keynote off with this, is the fact that Tim Willits recently announced his retirement. I think we talked about it earlier on the show, but yeah, they had a kind of a nice goodbye to him, and he's just a fellow Tim, but also just someone that we'd interviewed before in the past on Big Red Barrel, and was a really nice guy. So it's sad to see him going, and you know, wishing him success going on, etc. But yeah, it is. They had a nice send-off as part of the event as well.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, that was nice. And also, if anyone's interested, I did take some nice photos of the event and stuff that are up on my Instagram, and you can check that out at @basically_Tim. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Photos of the event there as well.
You and Instant are two things I would never, ever expect to be...
They also, for the event in the evening, there's some nice photos of this. There's a, like, ice sculpture of... I can never remember what they're called. What are the ball creatures called?
Oh, cacodemons.
Right, the cacodemons. They had a ice sculpture of that, which I thought was a particularly hard thing to make an ice sculpture out of. And they had, like, Doom-related vodka that they were pouring through as well, which was quite funny. It was a good event overall, and thank you very much for having me along. And yeah, it was good to get some hands-on time with Doom especially, and it would have been nice, as I said, if I'd got to go back the next day and maybe play some other stuff as well, or I'd been able to take some more time off, but it's been particularly busy at work, so I was glad I was able to carve some time out and have an enjoyable time in hell, basically.
Nice. Lovely. That's not an enjoyable time in Hull.
No,
that's an enjoyable time in hell. Two different things.
No one has an enjoyable time in Hull.
Oh, snap, son. So, Tim, you're a big fan of 3X strategy games. You're also a big fan of Advance Wars. Mm-hmm. And you've been playing something called Tiny Metal, Full Metal Rumble, which looks like it might scratch many of those itches. So
yes,
hit me with the things and stuff.
And yeah, we talked earlier in the year about a game called Wargroove, which was very much made by the developers as a love letter to kind of the fact that people aren't making Advanced Wars anymore, basically. Tiny Metal is very much a studio in that mold. This is a Japanese indie game studio called Area 35. yeah, they're hopefully not about to be stormed by lots of people looking for aliens. But anyway, it's very much even more closely in the mold of Advanced Wars, basically. With Wargroove, when we were talking about that, it's kind of, that was more fantasy-based, so it didn't have, like, tanks and stuff like this. Whereas Tiny Metal, the Tiny Metal series in general, of which this is a sequel to Tiny Metal, Full Metal Rumble, basically, is the sequel. And yeah, it's a game that I looked at before, nearly picked up the last one, and for whatever reason didn't at the time. As you said, it's very much my style of game. I very much like my turn-based strategy type stuff, and very much like Advance Wars, and this is more thematically similar to Advance Wars. It does do a few things differently in terms of combat, and I quite like most of the additions they've made in that regard. One of the main differences, you don't seem to have like a hero unit like you do in Wargroove and some of the versions of Advance Wars, where you have like a main hero unit on the battlefield that's your kind of commander. There's no commander type unit, but you do get like hero units, which are kind of like extra special versions of just a normal unit. So you'll have like a tank that's like a little bit better than a normal tank in one way or another, basically. Defensively or offensively or something like that. But yeah, generally speaking, they'll often be not quite a full unit of people as well. Like if it's a individual person, they can be like tanks and vehicles, but if it's an individual person, they won't be like a full battalion, but there'll be like one really strong person sort of thing.
Okay.
Means they're not as useful for like capturing things, but they're quite good in combat. There's also a couple of other differences just in the way that turn-to-turn combat works. One of the things I really like is they've got this ability where if you've got like multiple units that can surround a unit, you can all attack it at once. Basically, for each unit you set in position, you can have them lock on rather than attack or assault. Attack is just a standard attack, and it tells you the kind of percentage of damage you can do.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Attack means attack.
Yeah, yeah, but an assault is an attack that does less damage, but will also push the unit one square backwards as well, if possible. And then your unit will move into the square they're occupying. So it's quite good for knocking enemies out of capturing cities and factories and stuff like that, and other buildings that they're trying to capture. But then, yeah, as I said, you've got the ability to surround people as well. So instead of doing either of those, you can also lock on. So if you lock on, you don't shoot or anything, it just locks on, and then the next unit you move in place, you could stack them so you could have like, you know, up to, well, it'd be up to three others locked on. But then the last unit you move into place, you do an action called focus fire with them, and they will then coordinate an attack with all the people that have locked onto it. So you'll all attack first, and then they get a chance to retaliate. But if you've done enough damage between all those units, you'll obviously wipe them out, and there'll be nothing to retaliate with. It's a really good thing that a lot of other games don't necessarily take into account, because a lot of times you'll have to like weaken full strength units just to an attack and like kick off an attack with another unit when it would be better to use other units. There's one thing that it does similarly to Advanced Wars that I missed from Wargroove as well, which allows you to merge units. So if two units have been injured, you can merge them together to get a collective whole of, say, you know, you had five and four out of the 10 available that were at the start. You can add them together and they'll be back up to nine. So you wouldn't have to spend as many resources healing them and stuff as well, which is quite handy. Yeah, and it's standard kind of stuff with, you know, a territory and terrain. There's a few different like vehicle types that you didn't have in other games. It's got like radar units are helping spot things further away, so you have a better idea where, you know, things are coming from, but they don't actually have any form of attacking other units and stuff like that. And yeah, like most of the other stuff is, you know, fairly standard. There are air units, and then there's the kind of air defense type stuff as well. But yeah, like all of that stuff is pretty well implemented and pretty well done. I'm only about 4 or 5 hours in at the moment, which isn't that long for the game, but I think I've seen, you know, a lot of what it can offer type thing and what it does. As I said, it was a Japanese kind of developer, and yeah, oddly enough, like it's definitely got like a Japanese feel and presentation, but to me the art style doesn't quite like, it's not heavily anime kind of thing. I mean, it's not like this is a full-on anime style. It's definitely a Japanese animation style, but not like what I would necessarily fully associate with an anime style, if that makes sense. But yeah, like, I don't know. The one problem that I have with it at the moment for me compared to Advance Wars and Wargroove and other games of that ilk is the character and units don't really pop away from the map as much as I like. They don't stand out as much. This was especially evident in one of the early levels where a lot of it was like grass based and there was a lot of kind of, you know, green background, and I was playing as a green team, and that just seemed that was even more easy to lose things. But then also, like, when it's kind of icy and bluey, like, the blue team's a bit easy to get lost in that sort of background as well. Yeah, and oddly enough, it doesn't seem to give you like a choice of color that you stick with. It kind of just seems to bounce around from one thing to the next, basically. But yeah, it's very much if you liked Advance Wars, you're probably going to like this, which is a bit reductive. As I said, my slight problem with the graphics aside, I kind of really like the different wrinkles they've put to the strategy and how the actual gameplay works.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit different. About it's a bit more like Advance Wars with like capturing things in the style of like how you take over buildings and stuff, but there is a few more tactics and things that you couldn't do in that game that can counteract it, like I said about the assault, about pushing people out and stuff like that. And yeah, like overall I really enjoy it, and I can see myself playing quite a bit more of it as well. So
awesome.
Yeah,
happy days of happiness. It's already available on PC, I believe, and you've been playing it on Switch, right?
Yeah, I've been playing the Switch version. Again, you know, I think this style of game is a good fit for that platform particularly. Mostly been playing it in handheld mode. I had a quick look at the TV mode, mainly when I was running out of battery. But yeah, like, as I said, that's my only complaint on the smaller screen especially. It can be a bit easy. As I said, I would like those units to pop up against the map a little bit more. They don't stand out enough as I'd like. It's sometimes easy to get units lost and not necessarily see them that they're in play, and so therefore not necessarily take them into account when you're moving other units and stuff like that. So but yeah, that aside, I said it's a good tactical game, and yeah, definitely scratches the Advance Wars itch.
So make sure, if that sounds like your bag, go and get that in your console or your PC or whatever you want to do, however you want to insert it into the thing. So yeah, so I think, looking at the agenda, that's probably it for this week. But of course, we have to remind you all that Tuesday is indeed a Tuesday. Yep. and it's not a happy Monday.
Well, it's a happy Tuesday instead.
I'm going to try and do that link again for you, Tim, so you pick up where I'm at. But it's not a happy Monday, is it?
No, because it's a Tabletop Tuesday.
No, for God's sakes. What's the name of the game, Timothy?
Right, that's not the name of the game.
Best Day.
Yeah, that's not the name of the game.
Oh, well, why am I even doing this link?
that is the
I'm
question.
I'm a professional.
I am now asking you.
Well, I didn't put Best Day on the agenda.
Right, that's because
you're twisting my melon, man.
Special event.
You're
this
twisting
week
my melon.
Called Best Day. It is the second, third, no, third annual Best Day. Basically, yeah, every time at this time of year. We have hooked up with Bez from Stuff by Bez.
From Happy Mondays.
Who makes a number of games, including Yogi, Wibble Plus Plus, In a Bind. Someone that is a creator that comes along to quite a few of our events and has also been doing a load of tournaments with us. Basically, she's doing a tournament the first week of the month for every month of the last 6 months of this year. So this isn't the first time we'll be doing tournaments with her this year, but this is the big day that we normally do for her every year as well. And she's been touring around the country doing other things. She was in Leisure Games today, I saw, and other places. Should be a really good one to come along for. Not only do we have multiple prizes throughout the evening, but you'll be able to play with the creator herself and actually learn the game from her, so you don't have to read the instructions.
As in, you'll be able to play the game with the creator.
Yes, yes.
We're a family-friendly show.
Yep, but also she's setting the challenge where you can try and beat her and win a copy of the game doing that way. But then there's
again, beat her playing the game.
Yes,
all
yes.
Right.
But then there's also a competition throughout the night where you can actually win all seven of her games all in one go as well, basically. So yeah, like it as I said, multiple competitions throughout the night. Most of her games are like really good fun party games anyway, so they generally make for a really good night, which is why we're extra glad to have her along. But yeah, should be a really good evening to come along for. I did announce previously that this won't be the last creator that we're having this month either as well, so it should be a good one. I have a really good thing to announce at the end of this week as well, so it should be cool. It's gonna be a really good couple of weeks at Tabletop Tuesday. We had an absolutely rocking week last week as well. There was lots of people there and it was good fun. So yeah, thanks a lot for people that came along and played Keyforge in the end, is what we did last week. And I'll have that available to play from now on. But anyone that doesn't know, each and every Tuesday we normally have a different feature game, and if you play that feature game that evening, you can win a copy of the game at the end of the night. As I said, this week is a little bit special, and we'll have extra prizes to win throughout the evening, and there are more details from that on Big Red Barrel, and I'll also be just announcing what's going on at the beginning of the night on Tabletop Tuesday as well. For anyone that doesn't know, we do the event each and every Tuesday in the Loading Bar in Dalston, and you can, as I said, normally win a copy of a game just by playing it. There are more details on the top left-hand corner of bigredbarrel.com, and you can also join the nearly 1,800, I think we're nearly at, 1,800 people on our meetup group, and search for Tabletop Tuesday on meetup.com.
Splendid. Well, there you go. I think that about does us for 1 week, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. So, you need to all say thank you to Coleman for editing the show that he actually wasn't on.
Thank you, Mr. Coleman. And we forgot to do shout-outs for everyone else, so thank you for listening, but especially thank you to Mr. Coleman for editing on his holiday week. So, thank you.
Indeed, which we've tried to talk him out of, but he was having none of it. So thank you very much for listening. Make sure you head on over to www.bigredbarrel.com or twitter.com/bigredbarrel. Or, hell, I don't know, facebook.com/bigredbarrel, or check out Tim's Insta. I believe that's what the kids call it these days.
Yeah.
So, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. Make sure to tune in next week. Until next time, I have been Dan.
I might have been Tim.
Yeah, you have. And Coleman's been somewhere else.
Yeah, Coleman's been on holiday.
He certainly has. So, until next time, dear listeners, toodle-bye.
Your ears are quite welcome
for the podcasting goodness that you just heard.
Why not roll on over
to BigRedBarrel.com
for more podcasts,
news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.
Just got visions of Coleman just editing on the beach in sunglasses, sipping a cocktail, editing away.
Being told off for editing.